that's not what we need
with the business people. We need the business people to sit at the table with the homeless people and realize that the sleeping ban is the pet of the police department, and it serves none the business community. It serves none the residents. And they'll come to realize that if they talk. But as long as Neil Coonerty is going to start accusing secrecy, you know, I know what two meetings, what he's talking about. You know what two meetings he's talking about.
We're referring to the Elm Street and the Pelton Street.
Yeah. You know, and those were not official meetings, and now we finally got them to admit that.
They weren't with allies of people who want change. They were with Coonerty's allies. Ironically.
So I've got assurance from Gene Arner, who is the staff person that's on point for this, that he will be notifying us of all any such focus group meetings, any such meetings of the committee, any kind of open meetings, public hearing meetings. He's going to be completely informed in advance. And I spoke with him and said, any neighborhood association that invites you as a neighborhood association, if you aren't assured that they are inviting their neighbors, then you are verifying that meeting. I said, so if they're going to be a subcommittee of a neighborhood association, that's one thing. I said, you better get it really, really clear what meetings you're attending, and he said he was going to be sure of that. I don't know if I was just being yes or what, but I think they've heard us over the past 10 days, and I think things are pretty much on track. I wish things were going faster, but, we are having to pull together and bring some pretty, pretty fearful and resentful and stingy people together with some people that have been wounded and hurt and whose lives have been ruined by this law. So we're putting together a lot of people who are real, real sensitive. And so I'd appreciate it, if we all just say, oh, okay, yeah, sure, Neil Coonerty, instead of going on about Catherine. I think Catherine is playing super ambassador right now, and that's the way I see it. That's how I see it.
Well, let me respond, unless you don't want to hear my response.
Yeah, I'd want to hear your response.
Well, I mean, I obviously take a different perspective on Catherine. I think that, as I said, she's had many opportunities in the last 2 months to do something like protect homeless people while she's engaged in these sensitive, essentially right-wing meetings. That's been the case so far, and indeed...
I would say business-oriented meetings.
Well, that's right-wing, as far as I'm concerned.
I would say they're...
she has not had one meeting that I'm aware of with homeless people in any organized group, or with homeless advocates, or with the committee to repeal the sleeping ban,
Isn't she on the board?
Or with the homeless services center on this board, for that matter. I'm not aware of any meeting she's had, and I think you may be guarding her a little too closely.
I don't think I'm guarding her. I'm just trying to be objective, and I think what she's doing is she's catching up the community that's behind. The community that's behind is Neil Coonerty and those old guard progressive assholes.
That would be fine if she were also talking to us, but she's not talking to us. She is specifically declining to talk to us. She has her own agenda on this.
I don't know about this own agenda crap.
Now wait a minute. Now let's
own agenda stuff. I heard the same thing in the paper. The police department are saying the same thing.
I didn't get it from the paper. I got it from her behavior on December 8th, her behavior on November 24th, her behavior on November 17th.
Yeah, she's in the process of converting this old guard bureaucracy Stalinistic regime into a citizen's government. That's not exactly an easy task.
I'm not aware that she's doing that, but I mean,
well,
I would like
let's
to
see what let's see what January 5th looks like when they do the commission.
Well, we're all going to see that, but yeah. I think we have a right to make our predictions based upon her experience and her behavior. And as I said before, Byers made a deliberate she cut the ground out from under Sugar in his resolution. In his attempt to get some kind of real check on the police department that would have actually alleviated the suffering of homeless people.
I think Berlusconi failed us there.
I think Byers failed us there. She's in the majority. She has the fourth vote. If she'd gone
but
along,
they didn't come up
Morris
with a, they didn't come up with a actual legal thing that they could vote on. It was like they were trying to legislate and create legislature, and it was all bad law. Robert, they didn't have anything to vote on.
No, they had something to vote on. I'll tell you what they had to vote on. I mean, we obviously disagree rather heatedly on this, but I think what Keith was trying to do was state there should be no ticketing.
But he was trying. He wasn't succeeding.
He wasn't succeeding because Catherine wasn't helping him.
Well,
Catherine's been on the council for...
Neither was the city attorney
wait
that
a
works
minute.
For...
We
us.
Don't expect Barrison.
He
wait
for,
a
no, he
wait
works
a
for the that,
no.
that city council.
We don't
he had an obligation to
no,
say, this is what would work
I,
if
I don't want to hear
it.
The traditional bad guys all touted out. I know they're bad guys, and I don't need to be told. I'm concerned about the people who are supposed to be the good guys. And if Byers does not help him, then we have, I think, a real problem. problem. Now, it may have been an aberration. It may have been her mind was on the next, the exciting silver spur, silver bullet, whatever the hell it was, urgency measure that she did find some way to put on the on her agenda without putting any urgency measures that affected homeless people, like shelter or the sleeping ban. She couldn't do that, but she could put another urgency measure on the agenda. I think we have to see. This doesn't mean we have to write her off the books forever, but I don't think we should be, you know, Pollyanna.
To say that she's meeting secretly with right-wingers is not exactly painting a picture either, Robert. What she's doing is she's getting those people who are, once they are confronted with the reality of the sleeping ban law, they are, what did Tim Fitzmaurice call us the other day? He said they're, what's that term he used? The people that are complaining about the repeal of the sleeping ban, as soon as you confront them, they are ambivalent. She's making more ambivalence for us. I think that's a good job. Somebody has to be doing it.
Well, I hope you're right, David. I would think that if someone were really an ally in this, she would also be getting back to us. And I don't see her getting back to us at all.
I think she trusts us.
I don't think she trusts us. I think she feels that that she can drag us along because we're her only hope. And that's what they've been doing for years, and I'm really quite sick of that shit.
I know, and you know, I'm biting my tongue half the time too, Robert, but let's not say she's having secret meetings with right-wing groups and so forth. Let's paint the picture.
I didn't say there was secret.
But okay.
I misspoke.
That's what Coonerty's implying.
Well, I'm saying that she has had, I said it before Coonerty did. I said it 3 weeks ago, and you were concerned too that they were.
Oh, I was outraged.
You know, they were meeting with these groups privately, not just Catherine, but Catherine and the other two members is a sort of a, you know, talk about genuflecting. They were running off and genuflecting to the neighborhoods that don't give a shit about homeless people in this situation.
Members calling themselves the neighborhoods. That's what pissed me off.
Pseudo-neighborhood groups.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, we're probably getting too heated too quickly, and I only have 1 minute left on
the show. Happy New Year. Hey, everybody, go down to First Night and buy some buttons. Hey, maybe you feel sleeping bad and need some money.
That's a good idea.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, David.
And that's about it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides for this evening. I normally try to stretch my time out because I wait for Uncle Dennis to come in, but unfortunately I've given him my word that I will put on some of the tapes which he's left me. And in order to do that, I'm afraid my conscience will require me to go off the air very shortly and move into Earth First, the show which Uncle Dennis does so well, but I guess he's off tonight at First Night, or who knows what he's doing, but he's got a Judy Berry Memorial Tapes here instead. I want to thank you for staying with us here throughout. Very interesting first hour with Bill and how the DA's office and the PD's office deals with, quote, people accused of sexual crimes. Very nasty situation. Please join us again on Sunday at 11 o'clock for the next edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We'll be going for 2.5 hours, as usual, on Sunday. And we're going to be doing a lot of the things that I suppose we didn't get done today, involving endless, interesting street interviews. And I've got some leftovers from the police violence forum in Monterey. Got a couple of interviews, or some interesting information from the victims and that stolen lives situation, that's relatives of people killed by the police. Stay with us now for Uncle Dennis's Earth First show. And indeed, come on down to New Leaf Market at, I guess it's Church. No, I guess it's Lincoln. Lincoln and Pacific, where you'll find a shivering Bernard at the homeless table, at the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Bans table. Huff is there too. Lots of buttons, lots of flyers, lots of fun, and bring a warm coat. And come on back on Sunday at 11 o'clock.
Court clothes that I've worn on numerous occasions, and I would like to wear them for you now. The inscription reads, "No fucking compromise." It's really nice to be back in the land of my birth, especially since this poem came from two sources. The title of it came from my logger neighbor, and the rest of the poem came from my mother, who has been dead for 6 years. And I talked to her a lot, and this is the first time she's talked back. And I said, "Mama, I want a welcoming committee for this woman." And this is what she said. "John Muir welcomes Judy Barry into heaven." "They who carry her to the boat wave and wave and wave, as wave after wave of spring tide washes the hands of their grief, as drums roll and all the folks who know the songs turn out for her. And oh my, thunder rolls and every brass band that ever was turns out, because John Muir doesn't pilot the boat for just anybody." And the shore gleams, is gleaming with wave after wave of joie de vivre, beat like spring tides, drumming, gathered close, and gathered close, and gathered close. Goodbye, Judy. We love you. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Yes, that catchy chanty means it's time for Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. And that means me, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. From today, January 3rd, until, hey, we may go till 3 or 4 o'clock this afternoon, depending on circumstances, but certainly until 1:30 or 2, we've got Civil Rights for the Poor filling your ear. So stay with us. We're going to have interviews from John Vance in Berkeley, from Rahula Jafowski of the Bionic Bakers Brigade, the woman who pied Mayor Willie Brown in San Francisco, plus lots of interviews from the streets, the shelters, and the people here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Your calling number is, as usual, 427-3772 to join us. Stay tuned.
Christopher Mellon called Nasser in the coffee or Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc. Roy Cohn, Walter Ron, Toscanini, Daquan, Din Din, Boom Falls, Rock Around the Clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, Battle, Winning Team, Baby Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis, Bessie, Disneyland, Bartow, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Katie Grace, Trouble in the Suez. We can start the fire.
Here on 96.3 FM with Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. Our phone lines are open, and we hope working, 427-3772. It's your radio station. We're still on the air. In spite of the endless warnings from the FCC, we continue to believe the airwaves belong to the people, not the corporations, not the National Association of Broadcasters, not the California chapter of the National Association of Broadcasters, but to you and to me. The airwaves are community property, so let's use them. 427-3772 is the call-in number today. The topics today are civil rights. One I keep coming back to because it needs to be talked about so we can get them. We have, of course, the vacation is ending for the city council, we hope. They've been passing their time in warm houses, as have many of us, perhaps most of us listening to this broadcast, while at the same time, police, Parks and Rec Rangers, and even California Highway Patrol, I would imagine, First Alarm people, have been rousting folks for the crime of sleeping, as well as other so-called sight crimes. That is to say, they don't look nice to people, perhaps sitting on the sidewalk, perhaps lying down on the sidewalk, perhaps being in a park after dark, perhaps daring to walk along the riverside. Actually, that looks fine to me, but I guess to the city council folks like Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews and Michael Hernandez and Catherine Byers, who voted for this curfew on the levee, that they don't look so good. We want to make sure that suspicious-looking people, whoever they may be, which means, of course, all of us, because you can never be sure who you can suspect and who you shouldn't, keep off the San Lorenzo River levee after dark. So it's criminal for all of us to be there. And I heard from one of my street vendors, actually my street vendor coordinator who sells street spirit, that he was awakened by Officer Brand. Actually, he wasn't even sleeping. He was sitting wrapped up in a blanket downtown, and he was told to move on. This was several days ago in the so-called enlightened era, when folks are not hassled for sleeping without either a real complaint, and apparently Officer Brandt didn't cite one, or some kind of a significant real concern, I would say. And there was no concern except other than we know that certain classes of people don't get to sleep in Santa Cruz unless they pay or unless they are in someone else's house. That's just how it's always been. It's a tradition here in Santa Cruz. But it's hopefully a tradition we're going to end, and that process, hopefully, will begin tomorrow at 4 o'clock on Monday at the City Manager's Conference Room. That's at 809 Center Street, more or less the same complex of buildings where you go to city council meetings if you've been to them, right across from the main library and from the Civics Auditorium. And at 4 o'clock in the City Manager's Conference Room, the Camping Subcommittee, the Camping Ban Subcommittee, chaired by, I presume, Catherine Byers and including Chris Crone and Keith Sugar, will have the first of a number of meetings. They say they're going to meet twice a week, Monday and Thursday, 4 o'clock, until they've hammered out the changes that they feel are necessary to change the camping ban. Now, we, of course, don't feel it takes meeting after meeting and endless amounts of talk to realize that sleeping is a basic human right. And I'm going to read you later in the show two new flyers that will be distributed downtown today by the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban and by HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a local civil rights group that works to restore rights to poor people. One of the flyers is called Don't Sleep Till February. And the other is called Peace and Freedom Party to City Council and the Sleeping Ban Now. Sounds like an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Bernard from Santa Cruz.
Oh, hello, Bernard. I think we're just talking about you. Can you hear us on the radio?
Yeah, I thought this would be an appropriate time for me to just ask people, you know, urge people to come help me today. I'll be there around 2 o'clock, you know, setting up a table, leafly, urging people, you know, to come to the first task meeting, you know, this Monday at 4 o'clock at the city manager's office.
So where will your table be?
Well, the table will be in front of the new lease.
I've just actually mentioned that the first meeting of the City Council's sleeping or camping subcommittee is going to be meeting at 4 o'clock tomorrow, Monday, January 4th, at the City Council's City Manager's office. And that's pretty easy to find. You just go to the library across the street to where the City Council chambers are and ask for the Mayor's office, and you'll find at the same time the City Manager's conference room, which is right next to the Mayor's office. But you need some help today down at New Leaf. That's right down at Lincoln and Pacific, something like that.
That is right. So,
well, what are you doing down there? Are you creating trouble down there, Bernard?
Oh, no, I don't think we're creating trouble. Just petitioning our government. You know, we're getting a petition also. And this petition says that we want extra support services, you know, for the homeless people and to ban the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
And we want signatures on that. We're asking people to make calls to the City Council to express their unique viewpoints on it, and to get people to go to the task force. And also, there'll be a new leaflet, you know, putting out by the Peaceful Freedom Party, explaining its position and the ordinance, you know, that it wants passed.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be presented tomorrow at the task
meeting. At the subcommittee or the committee meeting for the City Council?
Right. And that's all I really want to say, Robert. I want to hear you on the air.
Okay, well, you will. Just tune in to 96.3.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Bernard.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that is Bernard, a tireless Peace and Freedom Party committee to repeal the sleeping ban, and I would even have to say Huff worker, who has put in dozens of hours in the last few weeks getting the word out to the people and getting the people's word in to the City Council. He, of course, was urging you, as I do, to call 429-3550, which is the City Council 24-hour message line, and then push the pound key and tell them, vacation is over, time to get back to work, let's end the sleeping ban. All those poor people that have been rousted or worried about getting rousted every night outside in freezing cold weather now suggest that you return to the task, you know, put away the Christmas ornaments, put away the teddy bears and the Christmas turkey. It's time to do what you should have done on December 8th, which is repeal the sleeping and blanket bans and start getting about the real job of finding places for people, affordable places for people to spend the night if they need to sleep at night, like campgrounds, like in their own vehicles parked in parking lots that are open to the public at night with adequate public facilities. Since more than $12 million has already been spent on the new police station, I think they could spend, oh, I don't know what, 0.01% of that amount of money. Let's see, 12 million, 12,000 is 0.1%, 1,200 is 0.01%. And that would certainly expand shelter services significantly this winter. I mean, it might not be the latest in infrared scanning equipment that police use on their vehicles to find homeless sleepers and pound on their vans and demand they come out saying, we know you're in there. But it might make that whole process unnecessary, because if you have places for people to go, then maybe they don't have to sleep outside. And if those who want to sleep outside or need to sleep outside for various reasons do that, maybe there can be safe and reasonable places afforded for them to do so. This, we hope, will be something of the subject matter of the conversations at the next 8 to 10 to 12 City Council subcommittee meetings, which again are 4 o'clock Mondays and Thursdays down at the City Manager's Conference Room, which is in the City Hall complex. We invite you to come on down, be a part of that process. This is the big outreach for input that the Catherine Byers talked about when she talked about revisiting the camping ban. And it's not bad to have a public process. I don't like doing it on the backs of the homeless people. That's what bothers me. I don't like doing it on the backs of people who are currently criminalized for sleeping. I say you first decriminalize sleeping, let them join in this process, and then we can all talk about what changes have to be made in the camping ban. But to only allow one segment of the population to do this, as for example Karen Gillette does when she denies late night buses to enable people who use her interfaith satellite shelter program to go up to the armory, as she did on December 28th, for Don't Sleep Tonight night, and as she did again on First Night, refusing the pleas of people that they be allowed to participate in public events at night. No, no, you're part of the homeless children scene, meaning all adults, of course, treated as children by Mother Gillette. You get to go up to the armory and get shut in all night and get to wake up at 5 o'clock and march out in the morning, but you can't be a part of the public process of First Amendment demonstrations and discussions and even entertainments that happen at the end of the year. This was really quite upsetting to me. I know that at least 36 people asked Karen Gillette individually if they could come to Don't Sleep Tonight Night. This is according to a report from former Armory shelter manager James May, who was distributing flyers and keeping track of the number of people who wanted to come to this protest event downtown, which was a kind of my car is my home, leave me alone protest, where folks parked their vehicles and had little kind of float-like vehicles. They had one guy had a big panda bear on top of his vehicle. That was me. Another woman had a bed on top of her vehicle. Many of the vehicles had signs festooned on them. Anyway, people were not allowed to come to this event, or they had to choose between sleeping outside illegally that night and not having winter shelter, or going with the early bus up to the armory that Karen Gillette provided. I should say that the community and the city and the county provided, because that's where the funding comes from. And it seems to me kind of arrogant and kind of prejudiced for a so-called homeless advocate service provider like Karen Gillette is supposed to be denying people that kind of transportation. And I certainly hope she doesn't continue to do it. We're going to request that she provide transportation for people who want to attend this week's city council meeting, which is on Tuesday in the afternoon. I believe it starts at 2 this week. This Tuesday. It's kind of a special meeting. And for people who want to come to these city council committee meetings on camping, which start at 4 on Mondays and Thursdays, I think that if homeless people want to attend, and who better than homeless people to be able to tell you what it's like to sleep outside, that the woman who is paid tens of thousands of dollars a year and has recently gotten a new car around that money should be working to ensure that there is a bus that will let them go up to the armory. It's not like she has to go out and buy a bus. She simply has to arrange for a scheduling of it. And I think she claimed on Don't Sleep Tonight Night that she didn't do this because her board might have objected and she had to consult her board. Well, her board does involve conservative merchants that she supported in the last election, like Linda Steinau, who actually opposed civil rights for homeless people. Karen Gillette finds herself with strange bedfellows at times. But in fact, it is really true that Karen Gillette is not controlled by her board, but she controls her board. She is the fair-haired girl, the fair-haired woman of the Homeless Services Center. She runs it. She actually was able to selectively purge members of that board this summer in the merger between Citizens Committee for the Homeless, CCH, and the Homeless Community Resource Center, the two groups that now make up her Homeless Services Center. So for her to say that she has to worry about what the board thinks is, dare I say it, a lie. And it's the kind of misinformation that I've come to expect, or I had come to expect years ago from Karen Gillette, but I had hoped we wouldn't have. Unfortunately, it seems that that's coming around again. For those of you who feel that Karen Gillette should provide a late-night bus for demonstrations and protests and public participation, not that she sponsors the protest, but she sponsors the right of her homeless clients to be able to attend events downtown, give a call to 458-6020. That is her number. It'll be a message phone today, but you can leave her a message suggesting that she respond to that concern and not try to cut off that discussion. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, good morning, Mr. Norris. How are you doing?
I'm good. It sounds like that man about men battling Bob LaMonica.
Well, hi, and Happy New Year to you and yours.
You've been listening to my tirades against poor Karen Gillette?
Well, I'm reading the Sentinel, of course, as your name mentioned on page A2.
Oh, dear, I haven't seen today's Sentinel. Perhaps you could read it for our audience, unless it's too obscene.
Well, it's very interesting because the last, what it is in the Insiders column, page A2 on the Saturday, January 2nd Sentinel, welcoming 1999. Excuse me, and it lists different people with kind of witty remarks about what the Sentinel would like to see.
Oh, this is the New Year's thing.
Yeah, the last one, before I read what it says about you, the last one says, insider staff, to get through the year without any typos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it has your name up here, homeless advocate Robert Norris, to say just once, I agree.
I agree.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it has a colon after homeless advocate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a colon after your name. It has an additional colon in your column.
Well, I think they need a colostomy is one of the things that might be helpful for the Sentinel.
There's a couple of issues I wanted to address that you addressed this morning.
All right, go for it.
And the river levy curfew and the late night buses that you're asking for the Homeless Resource Center to supply for protests.
Well, not really for protests, but for the option to attend late night events. And actually, I suggested they should be available for the Don't Sleep Tonight night, which was a protest, and for a first night, which isn't really a protest, but was an event that people wanted to attend. But really what I'm talking about is the process of talking about the camping ban, which is happening every Monday and Thursday at 4 o'clock. Surely the homeless should be allowed to be a part of that.
I'm sure that they can be if they can make it to the City Hall as to where the obligations of the homeless community resource center are to provide transportation to the City Hall or to First Night.
No, it's not that they have the obligation to provide transportation there. It's rather that they have to provide transportation from there up to the armory. Otherwise, people can't get up there. It's generally not legal for them to walk in, for example. And since these are people who would be going to the armory anyway, and they would be scheduling transportation for it at an earlier time, it simply means putting it ahead a couple hours.
Don't they already have a shuttle to the armory?
They have a shuttle, but only from the Homeless Community Resource Center, and only at the early time of 4:30.
Well, I mean, in context, that's something. All right, and I guess what I want to address is some degree of moderation on this issue. For example, the river levee curfew. Now, there have been muggings on the San Lorenzo River. We do not live in the...
Wait, are you supporting a curfew on the river levee?
In fact, I do.
Ooh.
Okay.
We disagree.
For the reasons of safety.
Well, are you saying that it's okay to suspend the civil liberties of the entire population because there were a few muggings along the river levee? By the way, they have never showed that there's any more muggings than anywhere else in town, but let's say that there were.
Well, this issue went all the way to the City Council, who are the elected representatives of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the City Council voted
But that doesn't make them right.
To retain a curfew, which can be withdrawn at some later point. I think that they they're obliged to address the issue of public safety.
I don't think it's a good way to address
it. The future of the levy will probably be that it'll be upgraded over the years and lit, right? And it'll be a walkway and it'll be attractive. I think that's kind of on the back burner of the agenda for the community. But I think they had to address the issue of danger at night and of things that were happening that...
You have any figures on what kind of dangers were actually happening at night? I wasn't aware that there was any substantially more danger than other places.
Well, I remember one guy getting shot because apparently somebody wanted to shoot somebody, and so they shot him hanging out by the levee. Now, that might have been in daytime. There have been muggings. It is dark back there. There are certain activities that happen that...
drugs, I think, is the big deal.
...that cannot be condoned above board. So it's a difficult position, and I tend to think that the move that was made was probably the correct move, and I qualify that with a probably. They can always rescind it. I think that it ties in also, you know, the sleeping ban and the camping ban, if it were lifted somewhat, it cannot mean that people can crash wherever they want. There has to be a reality here. This is not the Wild West anymore. I mean, we're in an era now of green belts,
uh-huh.
Right? So the idea of open spaces endlessly and you set up a tent somewhere, it's just not with us anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's really the issue. But I think certainly the issue, while it is criminal for people to be anywhere, is people sometimes take refuge under bridges. It's a traditional place to go. And that is illegal not only to sleep there now, but to even be under a bridge after dark is now criminal behavior. To me, this is the height of government arrogance and police state, I don't know what you would call it, abusiveness. I mean, it's not the height, but it's an indication of a very bad trend for me. I guess I got to take issue with you on this one, Bob.
Well, now, if and I think this is probably going to happen, or it's going to come very close to happening, there will be an area set aside where people can park their vehicles. It will be monitored. All right, I think that is a positive.
What about measure. The 70% of people who don't have vehicles?
Hopefully there will be measures that evolve that can take care of those people also. Right, but like the phrase goes, the poor will always be with you. And I don't want to slough this off, and I'm all for supporting and providing for those that are in need. Right, but we cannot be arrogant about this and expect anything in return. The best that one can expect, I think, is a moderate response. I think a moderate response is a contained response. I think to go beyond that is really not being sincere with the issue, in my opinion.
What I'm saying is, I actually just had, you know, I'm kind of reiterating the two issues that I brought up before, which is, I feel it is outrageous to make it illegal to be, I think curfews are generally outrageous, unless you're in a wartime situation. To call this a wartime situation in Santa Cruz is to impose a police state mentality, and I don't think that is, I think that's a very bad thing. And I think to use the drug war to do this is an even worse thing. And I think that these two shadows feed each other, this police state power and the drug war stuff. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Danner's office, for example, or Canlis's office, if she becomes the new DA, feeds off of. So I really feel that curfews, even for young people, are wrong. I think that that should be in the hands of parents. I think that if people are doing something criminal, they should be prosecuted for it. But I don't think being outside after a certain hour or being in a certain place after a certain hour should be a criminal offense.
Well, now the curfew. And once again, this is an ordinance enacted by elected public officials. This wasn't some...
Hitler was put into power by elected officials, too. That doesn't...
Yeah, and he also, when he was put into power, let's remember the Enabling Act, which gave him dictatorial rights.
Right.
Now, that, generally speaking, does not exist. In the United States of America, particularly if the people are willing to stay on their toes and keep their public officials on their toes, the curfew came into place, as I understand it, because of complaints, because of problems, primarily with young people.
The curfew came into place
reaction.
Because it came into place because Belcher and Jim Lang decided it was would be a good idea to put it into power. It came into place because I remember the discussion. Belcher was, when asked about specific crime stats along the levee, he didn't have them. He just made some sort of offhand anecdotal assertions that the council, eager to give the police department anything, and I underline, anything the police department wants, gave it to him. And I think this is very dangerous behavior. And you're right, it was elected officials who did it, and I think every one of those people should be kicked out of office forthwith.
I think they were reacting. This was not iron fist, deceptive, treacherous stuff.
There was no significant discussion on this issue.
This is 90s types of community laws. I think the pressure, the changes in our society, it's sad that there isn't more parental control and more self-control, and because of the lack therein, the governmental bodies are called upon to enact legislation, is what it boils down to. The curfew is kind of like raising the drinking limit to 21 when it was 18 for many, many years. It's based upon a reaction of the abuse, if you will, of the tolerance.
Unfortunately, you'd have to show me some specific stats, and those stats were never pulled out. If your argument, which is very reasonably phrased, had any substance to it, I would pay some attention to it. But the police chief himself had no figures. All he had was the naked power to do it, and so he did it. And that, to me, is what really pisses me off. I mean, I think it only pisses me off. I think it shows... Well, I think it should... I mean, I think to some extent he's responding to people who will kind of go along with this stuff on trust.
I don't favor... You know, I'm not for curfews, per se,
right.
But I think that there is a pressure element.
Mm-hmm.
Complaints, people are uptight, people are paranoid.
Yeah, but you're saying, what complaints?
Forget what it's, remember what it might be like, or ponder what it might be like to be 65, 70, 75 years old, and one is challenged by a group of 15-year-olds. Right, no matter how mellow one is and how much one remembers back to one's teen years, there's a fear element that happens, Robert, and I think that's how things like curfews come to pass. I don't necessarily support the curfew. It would be nice if it could be rescinded, but I can understand the logic to put it in place. The same with the River Levee curfew.
Well, the River Levee curfew also affects people who are 75 as well as people who are 15.
Yes, it's sad.
It means if you walk along and trying to enjoy a sunset with a friend, that's criminal behavior. And again, I might tend to agree with you. Well, let me just ask you, what specific instances that you remember justifies making it off limits to all of us in Santa Cruz?
I can't quote stats on that.
Right.
What I can say is that it's very dark. It probably has produced situations that were uncomfortable, and maybe some close calls, and maybe some physical damage and muggings that were occurred, where enough flags went down on the play, where the elected officials were called upon to put into place a curfew. I doubt whether there, even on the old city council, there was anyone that really favored a curfew per se. It was done as a reaction to the changing times. And I think it would be nice if you know, the community mellows out enough so that things like the curfew can change. Certainly if you can be drafted at age 18, you ought to be allowed to drink at age 18. But it's been shown that period, that younger period, it's highly destructive.
Well, I don't know. Use of alcohol to me is another matter.
I'm just trying to show that, you know, even well-intended, quote, liberal politicians are sometimes put in positions where they have to enact what appears to be draconian measures.
Well, see, you continue to justify it, but you don't. The problem is you're not presenting any specifics. You say that must be the case because they did it. That kind of an argument is, of course, post hoc ergo proctor hoc, as we learned in Latin class.
It seems to me, not having statistics before me, that one could argue that the River Levee is unsafe at night.
What one can argue, many public spaces within a 5-mile area of Santa Cruz are unsafe at night. Does that mean you don't allow people to go in them?
There is no doubt. You see, and this is where we're moving more and more into security guards. We're moving more and more into, what do you call those things that you walk through to check if you got metal detectors? We're more and more into surveillance cameras everywhere. It's because people are getting paranoid. And because to some degree things do happen, people do go into restaurants and open up with machine guns. It does produce a kind of a reactionary fear.
Yeah, well, reactionary fear is I don't think good public policy, and I think that we should pay attention to the argument of the woman who refused to go along with this, Mayor Celia Scott, who is the sole vote against both these curfews. Who, you know, said she just couldn't support this kind of draconian legislation. She didn't see the evidence for it. And I have to say that I don't feel it's helpful. I really have to say, I don't think it's helpful to say, gosh, these are changing times. That's why all these otherwise reasonable people voted for police state measures. That's what a curfew is.
A lot of stuff that used to happen only in big cities happens in smaller communities,
well,
including homelessness. All right? I remember the first time, and I don't want to get on the air too much longer, I know you got other callers, first time I saw a person crashed on the street, which was in New York City, was in the mid-70s. People just kept walking by, you know, the guy was just laying on the street, crashed out, and I saw it several times. This is in, like I said, the mid-70s, and it left a very deep mark on me.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that and the incredible rise in graffiti, right, which is destruction of private property, which is assault on the public's view, right, of its environment. These things that were once isolated to big cities have spread. They're everywhere. So it's an issue that everybody has to deal with, including homelessness. There's a balance and a moderate approach somewhere. At some point in time, the San Lorenzo River Levee will be lit and it'll be developed. And I think that'll change.
But isn't this kind of a middle-class perspective here? Bob, there are plenty of rivers and river levees where homeless people kind of find hidey holes to be, and because of the, you know, rising rents. So I'd like to see adequate facilities provided for all of them. But until such time as that happens, I think it is, you know, one has to understand the real point of these curfews isn't to go after violent people. I mean, they say that's what they're doing, but they are characterizing whole classes of people as violent. It's kind of a form of racism. It's a form of classism. It's a form of gentrification. Yeah, they want to turn the whole San Lorenzo River into a tourist attraction, and, you know, to essentially say anybody who isn't paying money can go somewhere else and clear off when it's not the right time to be there. That, to me, is a perversion of the public space.
Protection is not bad. Public officials, law enforcement are called upon.
Protection is the excuse, not the reality.
There are excesses, of course. If there is, of course, virtually with any law, there is, what's the phrase, selective prosecution. And isn't that sad? We need to point these things out. Mm-hmm. But let's also point out that the times are changing radically, both good and bad. One can look to the explosive takeoff of the surveillance industry.
Right. Well,
see where we're heading.
That's the takeoff of the police state. That's not the takeoff of the menace against the public. You look at the crime stats, they're down. The crime stats for murder, they're down. The crime stats for almost everything but rape are down. And the reality is, instead, the prisons are up. The police state is up, not because we have a more violent society, but because we have a more repressive mentality, and those who have strong concentrations of wealth want to defend their wealth, and they see this as the best way to do it. I mean, that's how I see it, and that's why I think that's happening.
I agree with you somewhat, and once again, prisons are a reaction, and it's a knee-jerk reaction. It's probably the lowest form of a reaction that one can take. Right, it's certainly in many ways a cruel reaction, and it's a not very understanding reaction, but it's a reaction to an increased violence that people
are very afraid of. It's decreased. It's decreased violence.
I want to separate the prison population that's there because they choose to engage.
Wait a minute, Bob. It is not true that there is increased violence. It is true that there is decreasing crime, not increasing crime. That's why your whole argument falls.
As I've said, we have seen, and I think anyone who honestly wants to look at the issue, the rise of crime in small communities in the latter part of this century is staggering. Things that were once the exclusive domain of major cities are now in smaller towns. And people knee-jerk, Robert.
Let's agree to disagree.
Absolutely. Hey, Happy New Year.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.